Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
So, ladies and gentlemen, 2 weeks in a row at the Le Show Dome. How could that be? Who's screwing up? But it's good to get back into the rhythm of the Le Show Dome, which is, recent listeners may not be aware, is not actually a dome. It's trapezoidal in shape. Ladies and gentlemen, how do, you know, the president, is it Bush? Yeah. President Bush visited Vietnam this week, which would be the right occasion to raise the question, how do the Vietnamese deal with terrorism? You see, he's in Vietnam. We had a war there. He drew a lesson from that war this week. So it might indeed be appropriate to ask, how do the Vietnamese deal with terrorism? Ed, you want to repeat that? No, Ed doesn't want to repeat that question, but it's how do the Vietnamese deal with terrorism? Dateline, Vietnam, a U.S. citizen convicted of terrorism in a Vietnamese court has been released and arrived this week in the United States. The case of Orlando, Florida resident Thuong Nguyen Q. Phu Chi had complicated efforts to do a trade deal between the United States and Vietnam. Senator Mel Martinez of Florida had blocked the trade bill until Phu Chi arrived home. Yeah, trade is more important than the Vietnamese fighting terrorism, at least. For Mel, a judge at People's Court, not the one you're thinking of, sentenced in Ho Chi Minh City, sentenced Phu Chi and six other defendants to 15 months of prison for terrorism, with credit for time served while awaiting trial. The defendants admitted they broke Vietnamese law, but denied any link to terrorism. Phu Chi's daughter said in an interview with the Washington Post she was told her mother had been released early for, quote, humanitarian reasons, unquote. So apparently the Vietnamese recognize humanitarian reasons when a convicted terrorist stands in the way of a trade bill. Phu Chi was born in Vietnam, came to the United States after marrying a U.S. sergeant. She was active in protests in the United States against the communist government of Vietnam. She and the other defendants, including two U.S. citizens, were accused of plotting to broadcast anti-communist radio messages, under the direction of an anti-government group based here in California. Vietnam considers that group, the Government of Free Vietnam is its name, to be a terrorist organization. One member has been suspected of planning bomb attacks on Vietnamese embassies. So it's not out of the realm of plausibility, you see, which I guess is the realm we live in now. Is it plausible that this person might be connected to terrorism? All right, then. Let's release them for humanitarian reasons. How the Vietnamese deal with terrorism. And ladies and gentlemen, in the buried lead department, this week, the Associated Press ran a story in its wires, which made all the papers. Here is the actual lead. New traces of plutonium and enriched uranium, potential material for atomic warheads, have been found at a nuclear waste facility in Iran, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency. So that sounds a little alarming. New traces of plutonium and enriched uranium, potential material for atomic warheads. The last sentence in the story, the very last sentence in the story. The official who spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to discuss the report publicly said, although the uranium was enriched to a higher level than needed to generate power, it was below weapons grade. So potential material for a weapon, except it was below weapons grade, so it couldn't be a weapon, would be the lead, ladies and gentlemen, if you wanted to do it that way. Hello, welcome to the show.
I fired and there's Harry falling.
Oh, man. I'm fine. Don't worry about me.
Correspondence or coherence, I am calling you. I was getting me down. Took a
train into town. And the sun was shining brightly, though the snow was falling lightly too. Made me think of how brave you are, and how come I have strayed so far, and why everything came apart in my head and heart. You will never be without me. You will never need to doubt me. There'll be something good about me soon. Like sun in the city snow, like snow in the city sun. I was watching you sleep, I've been watching you dream. Should we be beset with trouble, I would never let you come to home. Looks like maybe we'll lose our home, out of pocket and all alone. Should have worked and I should have known. Seen the dark clouds coming, but you will never be without me. I'm beside you, never doubt me. There'll be something good about me soon. Like sun in the London sun, like snow in the London. Undetermined, inessential, I am Coley, I am Coley, you.
I don't care much about cocaine, and you'll never see me jumping out no airplane. Wine and whiskey don't give me no thrill, and I don't care nothing about them nasty little pills. But women, now that's a whole nother thing. You won't see me wasting all the money I made. And you ain't gonna never see me drive no Escalade. If you're looking for a handout, you're wasting your time. I wouldn't give a crutch to a cripple. I wouldn't give a bum a dime. But women, whoa, that's a whole nother thing. Now when you talk about the women, that's a whole nother thing. I like them big, tall, short, fat, thin, and in between. I like them when they're gentle, and I like them when they're mean. I like them when they whisper,
but I love them when they scream. Don't be telling me what to do with my money. I know a good investment when I see one. Look at that one walking by over there. Look at that. I don't buy stock. I don't place no bets. And I won't be smoking none of them stanky cigarettes. Only one thing make me throw my money away. And that's a little TLC and a little TNA. But women, yeah, that's a whole nother thing. I'ma say it again, look here, women, 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 that's a whole nother thing. Play the blues, somebody. Oh, baby. That's a whole nother thing. All right, y'all. Come here, baby. Let me buy you a house.
That's okay. Thanks. I'm fine. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. No people to thank for coming by to the book signings this week, because there weren't any, but that starts right up. After the holiday again, if you want to come by, see me, hear me, smell me, touch me, feel me, buy me book.
In other words, buy the book.
In other words, buy the book. That'll be starting up again this week. Only thing to remind you of is holiday sing-along at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco this coming Friday and Saturday. You might want to check that out. Some fabulous people forcing you to get into the holiday spirit. Despite your better judgment. Ladies and gentlemen, those pesky inspectors general are at it again. I think it's a new department of the program, the damn inspector general, because you know the Bush administration is trying to get rid of the special inspector general for Iraqi reconstruction because he's brought such bad news. Well, you know, he's not the only damn inspector general doing that. The Bush administration's proposal to secure the nation's borders with that high-tech virtual fence is likely to cost far more than the $2 billion that industry analysts initially estimated, maybe up to $30 billion. And that'd buy a lot of houses in New Orleans, wouldn't it? This new figure comes from the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General. I say abolish him. Me. The ambitious plan to deploy sensors, cameras and other surveillance technology along 6,000 miles of the borders with Canada and Mexico runs the risk of runaway costs because of poorly defined objectives and a vastly overstretched contracting staff at the department. Look at those costs run! All right, then. The dramatically higher estimates delivered to House members by Inspector General Richard Skinner. He's a dead man walking. He's toast. The damn Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, spoiling everything for everybody. Injected a new dose of skepticism into the national debate to curb illegal immigration, according to the story in the Washington Post. Feasibility of the Bush administration's preferred plan, the fence, to which Congress has already dedicated $1.2 billion and is beginning on a pilot basis along a 28-mile stretch south of Tucson, draws fresh doubts from Congress about its eventual price tag. Hey, we got the money, as long as we're not bogged down in... Oh, yeah, that's right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Dateline Nairobi. Climate change is to blame for health problems such as increasing epidemics of malaria and waterborne diseases in Africa, heat wave related deaths in Europe, and the high incidence of cerebral cardiovascular conditions in China. This according to specialists calling for public health responses to tackle the problem. The resurgence of disease outbreaks calls for better climate surveillance and response and better health planning in coping with such disasters, says Diarmid Campbell-Lendrum, a scientist with the United Nations World Health Organization. Who? That's right, who's on first? As we impact on the climate, it is unreasonable to think that this will not impact on health, he said. Industrialized nations, the principal emitters of greenhouse gases blamed for contributing to climate change, were loading health risks on developing countries, said Campbell-Lendrum. If the sun warms the earth too dangerously, the time may come to draw the shade. This also from Nairobi. The shade would be a layer of pollution deliberately spewed into the atmosphere to help cool the planet. The proposal comes from prominent scientists, among them a Nobel laureate. The reaction at the annual UN conference on climate change in Nairobi is a mix of caution, curiosity, and some resignation to such, quote, massive and drastic operations, as the chief UN climatologist describes them. The Nobel Prize-winning scientist who first made the proposal is himself not enthusiastic about it. It was meant to startle the policymakers, says Paul Crutzen of Germany's Max Planck Institute for Chemistry. If they don't take action much more strongly than they have in the past, he says, then in the end we have to do experiments like this. Serious people are taking his idea seriously. This weekend in Moffett Field, California, NASA's Ames Research Center hosts a closed-door, high-level workshop on the global haze proposal and other geoengineering ideas for fending off climate change. The Dutch scientist Crutzen, awarded a 1995 Nobel Prize in Chemistry, uncovering the threat to the ozone layer, suggested that balloons bearing heavy guns be used to carry sulfates high aloft and fire them into the stratosphere. While carbon dioxide keeps heat from escaping Earth, substances such as sulfur dioxide, a common air pollutant, reflect solar radiation back out, helping to cool the planet. Tom Wigley, a senior U.S. government climatology expert, followed that article with a paper of his own in the journal Science. Wigley cited the precedent of the huge volcanic eruption of Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines in 1991. It poured so much sulfurous debris into the stratosphere, it is believed to have cooled the Earth by half a degree centigrade for about a year. Wigley ran scenarios of stratospheric sulfate injection through supercomputer models of the climate and reported that the idea would indeed seem to work. Even half that amount per year would help. A huge dissemination of pollutants would be needed every year or two as the sulfates come back down as acid rain. The U.S. scientists said a temporary shield would give political leaders more time to reduce human dependence on fossil fuels. He says experts must more closely study the feasibility of the idea and its possible effects on stratospheric chemistry. Well, why would it have any effect on stratosphere chemistry? It's just screwing around with it. Forest fires in northern countries may cause regional cooling and not warming, as was previously thought. Oh, I'm so confused. It's the warming is causing the cooling? Researchers say their new findings could mean that on a global scale, forest fires will not affect climate change one way or the other. And far fewer polar bear cubs are surviving off Alaska's northern coast, according to a federal government report released this week. I better not have been from an inspector general, or I'm going to... The study of polar bears in the South Beaufort Sea, which spans the northern coasts of Alaska and western Canada. I blame Canada. I'm sorry. Also found that adult males weigh less and have smaller skulls than those captured and measured two decades ago. Be cuter. The study does not directly blame the changes on a decline in sea ice. However, fewer cubs and smaller males are consistent with other observations that suggest changes in sea ice may be adversely affecting polar bears. Study warns the decline in cub survival and smaller adult males are the same conditions that preceded a decline in the polar bear population of western Hudson Bay, Canada, where the population dropped 22% in 17 years. The grim reaper of global warming is now clearly killing polar bear cubs, says the head of an Anchorage, Alaska-based group aimed at halting climate change. I say they're cuter. That's just me, ladies and gentlemen. But it's just me here, so who else is would be saying that? You have to ask yourself that. Ladies and gentlemen, some news about the new Iraq. There's the last person still believing in that policy. Please turn out the lights on your way out, because the I don't know who it is deserting the ship this week, but they're eating a lot of cheese. First of all, here's this quote from President Bush. I don't have it on tape, but this is President Bush in Vietnam, as I mentioned earlier. He's in Vietnam earlier this week, making comparisons between Vietnam and the Vietnam War and the Iraq War, and saying this about the need to not quit, in his words. This is the quote. "We're not leaving until this job is done, until Iraq can govern, sustain, and defend itself," unquote. Now, I may have missed something there. I may, you know, since I was reading, I may not have heard right. But it doesn't seem to me like as if I read the word democracy or democratic anywhere in that. Did I? Let's just check. "Until Iraq can govern, sustain, and defend itself," unquote. That's when the job is done. Ladies and gentlemen, that job was done before we invaded. It governed, sustained, and defended itself just fine. Job was done before we started the job. Okay, who is it leaving the ship this week? Joshua Muravchik, a neoconservative at the American Enterprise Institute, told the Washington Post he's distressed to see neocons turning on Bush, but says he believes they should admit mistakes and openly discuss what went wrong. Quote, "All of us who supported the war have to share some of the blame for that. There's a question to be sorted out, whether the war was a sound idea but very badly executed, and if that's the case, it appears to me the person most responsible for the bad execution was Rumsfeld, and it means neocons should not get too angry at Bush about that. It may also be," he said, "that the mistake was the idea itself, that Iraq could serve as a democratic beacon for the Middle East. Quote, that part of our plan is down the drain." Unquote, Joshua Muravchik. Kenneth Cakewalk Edelman, quoted here from the Vanity Fair article. Just want to reemphasize what he says, because he says it in a different way. The breaking point for him was Bush's decision to award medals of freedom to L. Paul Bremer, head of the Coalition Provisional Authority, General Tommy R. Franks, and then-CIA Director George Tenet, quoting Cakewalk Edelman. "The three individuals who got the highest civilian medals the president can give were responsible for a lot of the debacle that was Iraq. All told," he said, "the Bush National Security Team has proved to be the most incompetent of the past half century." But obviously, he adds, the president is ultimately responsible.
Hey, we had our accountability moment. It was called whenever.
Attacks in Iraq reached a high of approximately 180 a day last month, reflecting an increasingly complicated conflict that includes sectarian clashes of Sunni and Shiite militias on top of continuing strikes by insurgents, criminal gangs, and al-Qaeda. This according to the directors of the CIA and the DIA. No single narrative is sufficient to explain all the violence we see in Iraq today. We need more narratives, ladies and gentlemen. There's a severe narrative shortage. That's where Hollywood can help out. We got narratives up the wazoo. As a matter of fact, that's where Lieutenant General Michael D. Maples, the head of the DIA, attempted to describe the enemy. Iraqi nationalists, ex-Baathists, former military, angry Sunni, jihadists, foreign fighters, and al-Qaeda, who create an overlapping, complex, and multipolar Sunni insurgent and terrorist environment. He added, Shia militants. That is complicated. Some Kurdish Peshmerga and extensive criminal activity further contribute to violence, instability, and insecurity. In unusually harsh terms, the two intelligence directors spelled out how quickly the violence in Iraq has escalated this year, from 70 attacks a day in January to 100 a day in May, and then to last month's figure of 180 a day. The longer this goes on, the less controlled the violence is, the more the violence devolves down to the neighborhood level, says Michael Hayden, head of the CIA. The center disappears, and normal people acting not irrationally end up acting like extremists. The Bush administration continues to emphasize the role of al-Qaeda in Iraq, but Maples of the DIA described the current situation as mostly an intra-Arab struggle to determine how power and authority will be distributed with or without the U.S. presence. Al-Qaeda and foreigners messing around were estimated to total no more than 1,300, ladies and gentlemen, while Hayden, pressed by senators, estimated the number of insurgents in the low tens of thousands. Maples estimated the number of Iraqi insurgents, including militias, at 20 to 30,000, and said there are many more who supply support. It's complicated. That's the problem. It was supposed to be simple. And, ladies and gentlemen, here's what happens when you tell the truth about Iraq and you live in Denmark. The editor and two reporters from one of Denmark's main newspapers have gone on trial charged with publishing secret intelligence about Iraqi weapons. Well, or the lack thereof. In articles published 2 years ago, they quoted from an analysis by a Danish intelligence agency, Frank Grevel. His report, written before the war started, concluded that there was no evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We weren't all wrong. Ask Frank Grevel. The journalist could go to jail if found guilty. Denmark is usually an ardent defender of freedom of expression. The editor-in-chief of the newspaper went on trial along with the reporters. They pleaded not guilty. Grevel was sentenced last year to 4 months in jail for leaking the documents to the reporters. The Danish Prime Minister, Anders Fogh Rasmussen, supported the invasion of Iraq and told Parliament he was convinced Saddam Hussein did have WMD. The defense lawyer for the journalist told the court his clients had done nothing wrong because there was a huge public interest in the information they published. So, ladies and gentlemen, it ain't just us. And now, news from outside the bubble. Dateline Australia. As Australian troops reach full strength in Afghanistan, U.S. intelligence chiefs have warned that Taliban insurgents backed by Al-Qaeda are likely to step up lethal attacks on coalition forces. The intelligence chiefs predict even more intensive fighting in Afghanistan next year as the insurgents increase their forces and Al-Qaeda defines Afghanistan as a critical battleground in its war against the West. Well, I thought Iraq... Defense Intelligence Agency Director Michael Maples told the U.S. Senate Armed Forces Committee that in 2007, insurgents are likely to sustain their use of more visible, aggressive, and lethal tactics to undermine international support for the reconstruction of Afghanistan. The Sunday Age newspaper in Australia reveals that Al-Qaeda planned to target Australian troops in Afghanistan as malicious crusaders. And NATO cannot win the fight against the Taliban alone and will have to train Afghan forces to do the job, said the UN's top official in the country. At the moment, NATO has a very optimistic assessment, says Tom Koenigs, the diplomat heading the UN mission in Afghanistan. They think they can win the war, but there is no quick fix. He said training the fledgling Afghan National Army. They've been fledgling now for how many years? Good fledgling, babe. To defeat the Taliban was crucial. They could win, but against an insurgency like that, international troops cannot win, he said. Attacks in Afghanistan have increased fourfold this year, and 3,700 people have died, mostly in the south. The U.S. has made 2,000 airstrikes in Afghanistan since June, against only 88 in Iraq. Last week, an umbrella group of Afghan and international aid agencies said the crisis highlights the urgent need for a rethink of military poverty reduction and state-building policies in Afghanistan. It's going to be the word of the year, ladies and gentlemen. Rethink.
I recall how we lived on the corner of the bed, and we'd speak of a Swedish room, of Hessian and wool. and we talk with our eyes of sweetness in our lives, and tomorrow's a rich surprise. Some things we could do in our madness. We burned 100 days. Time takes time to pass, and I still hold some ashes to me, an occasional dream. And we'd sleep oh so close, but not really close our eyes, between the sheets of summer bathed in blue, the gently weeping nights. It was so long ago, I can't really touch your name, for the days of fate were strong for you, they danced you far from me. In my madness, I see your face in mine, I keep a photograph, it burns my wall with time, an occasional dream. How we lived on the corner of a bed, and we'd speak of a Swedish room, of Hessian and wood, and we'd talk with our eyes of the sweetness in our lives, and tomorrow's a rich surprise. Some things we could do in our madness. We burned 100 days. Time takes time to pass, and I still hold some ashes to me, an occasional dream. Time, an occasional dream of mine, an occasional dream.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, what's our friend Pakistan up to? We know what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan now, but what about our friend the Big P? Pakistan said it successfully test-fired a new version of its nuclear-capable medium-range missile this week. Hey, congratulations. That's a show of power a day after peace talks with India that were criticized by domestic Pakistani hardliners. I get it. They're doing the shimmy. Guess where Pakistan got its design for the missile they test-fired this week? Hans? No, Hans, you can't answer. You got to go back to Denmark, stand trial. No, the answer is North Korea. Isn't it wild? Our friends the Pakistani get their missiles from our enemies, the North Koreans, and our friends the Pakistanis sell nuclear plans to our enemies, the North Koreans. Talk about complicated. It's more complicated than fighting in Iraq. Missile has been test-fired many times. Must be getting tired. Thank you. Prime Minister Shavkat Aziz watched the launch and congratulated scientists for developing the new version of the missile. Pakistan, he said, believes that peace that comes from a position of strength and operational readiness. Pakistan says the London Times is allowing Taliban fighters who might be wounded in battles with the British or other NATO forces in Afghanistan to trot back across the border to be treated at safe houses. The Sunday Times found Taliban commanders and their fighters recuperating in the city of Quetta and moving freely around parts of the city. In a white-walled compound in the northern suburb of Pashtunabad, that's where the Pashtuns live, more than 30 Taliban were recovering from the bloodiest fighting in Afghanistan in 5 years. They lounged on cushions, sipping green tea and sucking at boiled sweets, while laughing at NATO reports that they've sustained heavy casualties.
They're sucking at boiled sweets? I'm going to...
Pakistan is not a banana state, says President General Perv. And the allegations that a Pakistani intelligence agency is helping the Taliban and other militants are baseless. That's what General Pervez Musharraf said in an interview with a German magazine. Focus! Like the band, love the magazine. Pakistan is not a banana republic, he says. Our army is well-organized and loyal. Army personnel constitute the major chunk of the intelligence agency. He said Pakistan Pashtuns may be supporting the Taliban, but such allegations against Pakistani intelligence were baseless and incorrect. And finally, on the subject of our friends, the Pakistanis, the Legislative Assembly of Pakistan's Northwest Frontier Province, that's, I believe, one of the provinces that abuts Afghanistan, this Friday passed a resolution demanding that the Pakistani government free the father of the Pakistani A-bomb, Dr. A.Q. Khan, because he's ailing, and he's in house arrest, and he'd like to get physicians of his own choice. This is the guy, ladies and gentlemen, who sold nuclear know-how, plans, fixins to the North Koreans, the Lebanese, the Libyans, and the Iranians. And his punishment is that he can't choose his own doctor. Justice is tough in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, isn't it? The Islamist-dominated assembly made the demand as Khan completed 1,000 days in house arrest. That is so grim. I hope he doesn't have cable. Khan is considered a national hero in Pakistan for giving Pakistan nuclear weapon capability. In spring this year, the government announced he was suffering from prostate cancer and arranged surgical removal under its supervision. You like that government medicine, huh? He was returned to his confinement in Islamabad after recuperation in Karachi, but his health has been worrying his family, which is not allowed to live with him. Now, we don't know if he likes that or not, but that's the way it is. In our friend Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen, ad agency executives are leery, if not outraged, about Fox's highly controversial November sweep special, O.J. Simpson, If I Did It, Here's How It Happened, scheduled to air on the Fox network. I'm so proud to be a part of that family at the end of the month. I can't think of a client that would go near this, says Ira Berger, media director at the Richards Group in Dallas. I can't see any packaged goods advertisers buying this. If you're looking for backlash, this would be the Super Bowl of backlash. It's going to pull up Fox ratings and create buzz, says Berger. Fox needed to do something in the fourth quarter. They were virtually invisible. They would not only have problems with advertisers, there could be an issue with Fox affiliates that might not want to take the show, says the vice president of corporate research for Horizon Media. It's the lowest form of hype, says Gary Carr, senior vice president of national broadcasting for TargetCast. It's an embarrassment to our business. I can't imagine anyone in their right mind buying into this. I'm ashamed for Fox for doing this, after the network gained respectability in recent years. Some speculate the network is just testing the advertising waters and will announce a few days before airing that it's a commercial-free event. Of course, then it won't qualify for the ratings, the way I understand the whole deal, but what do I know? There will be more on this story moments from now here on Le Show.
Rising up, back on the street. I did my time, I took my chances. When the distance, now I'm back on my feet. Just a woman and her will to survive. It's the eye of the tiger, it's the thrill of the fight. I'm rising up to the challenge of a rival. And the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night. And he's watching us all with the eye of the tiger. So many times it happens too fast. You trade your passion for your glory. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past. You must fight just to keep them alive. It's the eye of the tiger, it's the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of a rival. The last known survivor stalks his prey in the night, and he's watching us all with the eye of the tiger. On the street, I took my time, I took my chances. When the distance, now I'm back on my feet. Just a woman and her will to survive. It's the eye of the tiger, it's the thrill of the fight. I'm rising up to the challenge of a rival. And the last one survived. Stokes his prey in the night, and he's watching us all with the eye.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Book Bag. Book Bag, chit and chat about the fascinating world between the bindings. I'm Ira Zitkin. Since the advent of the audiobook almost two decades ago, the publishing world has been waiting for the next better mousetrap, a new way to entice a new generation of readers into the new habit of reading. Our guest today thinks she may have stumbled onto that mousetrap, and first indications are she may find herself rolling in cheese. Judith Schmagagan is the editor-in-chief of a new publishing imprint, Subjunctive Press, that has a most unusual specialty, the hypothetical memoir. Judith, welcome to the Book Bag.
Thank you, Ira. I've wanted to be here ever since I walked in.
Tell us in a declarative way, if you will, about the hypothetical memoir.
Ira, in the world of nonfiction writing, there are only two things that prevent authors from telling the whole unvarnished truth. The kind of truth readers would be willing to pay $30 a copy for. Those two forces...
No, I was afraid you weren't going to get to them.
Are lawyers and ego. There are legal reasons that certain books just haven't even been written until now, and of course, the human ego often stands in the way of admitting something historic or sexy. So, there was a whole world of books that either never existed at all or existed in such a tame, watered-down form that they went straight from the printing plant to the remainder bin.
Without even passing Amazon.
Those are the books that Subjunctive Press is going to publish because the hypothetical memoir employs the magic word that Silence is both the attorney's and the ego.
And the word is if.
You've read the press release.
I have indeed. It's written with a dry enthusiasm.
Thank you.
I think your first book is emblematic of just how promising the new genre might be. If I cared about World Domination by Rupert Murdoch. Murdoch has never written a conventional memoir, has he?
Of course not, because he's still in the arena, and what Mr. Murdoch would call the self-appointed umpires and referees would be the first people lining up to buy a conventional memoir in the hope of finding a smoking gun or two.
And yet, in If I Cared About World Domination, Mr. Murdoch outlines a sly and ruthless formula for ensnaring media enterprises and politicians alike, doesn't he? It's almost like the smoking gun without the smoke.
That's right. In Chapter 7...
One of my favorites, by the way.
He gives a step-by-step scenario of how, if he had wanted to, he would have staked out a conservative ideological position personally while making favorable business deals with everyone from British left-wingers to Chinese communists, all in the pursuit of media domination in every segment of the globe. I mean, what if somebody had ever tried to do that? This would be the game plan.
He also speculates, I guess you'd say, on the way he would have hornswoggled a succession of investors into giving him billions of dollars while he would have retained operational control of all his companies.
Yes, you can read it as a hypothetical business book as well as a hypothetical character study.
Well, it might be fair to say you could read it as anything except a hypothetical cookbook.
It might.
Judith, I know Mr. Murdoch couldn't be here with us today, or any day, but could you give us a little bit of the flavor of If I Cared About World Domination?
Well, I don't read that well without my glasses, Ira, and I'm too vain to wear them on the radio. But I did bring along a short excerpt from the audiobook edition, if you'd like to hear it.
I think that would be a first for our program. It's a little scary. But did Mr. Murdoch do the audiobook?
No, it's read by O.J. Simpson.
The famous...
celebrity, that's right. This is from the last chapter about how Mr. Murdoch might have handled his most recent controversy, if he'd had one.
From If I Cared About World Domination by Rupert Murdoch.
The thought would have occurred to me, why wouldn't I put this titillating, borderline offensive program on my broadcast network while encouraging my cable news network to denounce it? That way, if I'd wanted to, I could have corralled both the audience for the program and the audience repelled by the very idea of it. As with the political alliances I could have made, each side would think I stood for some principle, while I would be trying to keep a straight face all the way to the bank.
O.J. Simpson reading from the Rupert Murdoch hypothetical memoir, If I Cared About World Domination. Great presence on Mr. Simpson's voice. What was that, a U-87?
I'm sure it was. We're going for quality here.
Judith, you've just announced a wave of signings for future hypothetical memoirs, haven't you?
A couple of really big ones, Ira. If I Screwed Up Big Time by former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and If I Nailed Anything That Moved by former President Bill Clinton.
Well, that latter one's a bit on the titillating side.
Well, I certainly hope so. We didn't sign him in the hope of getting the hypothetical scoop on welfare reform.
Will O.J. Simpson be reading their audiobooks as well?
I tend to doubt it, Ira. I think if we didn't get the authors themselves for some reason, we might want to go for a Charlie Rose.
Oh, good choice. And good luck, Judith McGagan.
Thank you.
With your entire list of books from Subjunctive Press, the first one should be in bookstores in time for the holidays?
If we published it, yes.
Thanks for joining us today in the Book Bag. We had help today from the Pulp Institute. Without us, you'd be reading on bark. Next week, another enlightening conversation about the world between the table of contents and the index. Until then, I'm Ira Zipkin, climbing out of the book bag. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
O melhor o tempo esconde longe, muito longe, mas bem dentro aqui. Quando o bonde dava a volta ali. No cais de Araújo, Pinho, Tamarindeirinho, nunca me esqueci.
onde o imperador fez xixi. Cana doce santo, amaro, gosto muito raro, trago em mim por ti. E uma estrela sempre a luz. Bonde da trilhos urbanos, vão passando os anos e eu não te perdi. Meu trabalho é te traduzir. Da matriz ao conde, no trole ou no bonde, tudo é bom de ver. São Popó do Maculele. Mas aquela curva aberta, aquela coisa certa, não dá pra entender. O Apolo e o Rio Suba. Pena de pavão de Krishna, maravilha, Vish Maria, mãe de Deus. Será que esses olhos são meus? Cinema transcendental, trilhos urbanos, Gal cantando balancê. Como eu sei lembrar de você?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh, so sorry. A former Texas A&M University student has publicly apologized for his role in making a video showing the degradation of a white student in blackface. The unidentified ex-student apologized to the school and to blacks. The 3.5-minute video was made 2 years ago and raised protests when it surfaced last week. In it, a white student using a belt as a whip admonishes and whips another white student in blackface makeup. The president of Texas A&M issued a statement saying the three students involved admitted responsibility and that they withdrew from the institution. I am truly outraged by this moronic video, said the president of Texas A&M. Those who made it are not true Aggies. Unquote, the president of Texas A&M, who happens to be the new incoming defense secretary, Robert Gates. He may not know much about the war, but he knows a true Aggie. The Arizona Cardinals have apologized for a sound system glitch that marred a tribute to Pat Tillman, who left the NFL team to join the Army Rangers and died in friendly fire in Afghanistan 2 years ago. Fans stood during halftime as Tillman's name was added to the team's Ring of Honor. A video montage on the stadium's giant screens was shown, and former teammates talked about his spirit. Fans did not hear a word until the last segment. The Cardinals posted an official apology on the team's website. Our intent was to provide a very special tribute to Pat, and in the end, we did not do that. We regret that very much, they said. A suspected Islamic militant told judges in Jakarta, Indonesia, he took part in the beheadings of three Christian girls on an Indonesian island racked by religious violence to avenge the deaths of Muslims. And then he apologized to the families. We are not cold-blooded killers, said Hasanuddin. We just wanted revenge. That's a good excuse, really. We just wanted revenge. Hollywood star Brad Pitt has apologized to Mumbai police. That's the former Bombay. After a scuffle between his partner Angelina Jolie's bodyguards in India, of course, and parents at a school. Three of Jolie's bodyguards were arrested and later freed on bail after parents at the school filed a formal complaint with the police. Jolie is in India filming a movie about U.S. journalist Daniel Pearl's abduction and murder by Islamic militants in Pakistan. India is standing in for Pakistan? This means war. I am sorry for whatever has happened and for any inconvenience caused to the sentiments of people we love children who would not do anything to harm them, Mumbai Police Chief Aon Roy quoted Pitt as saying to him. Denmark apologized to Turkish Economic Minister Ali Babacan, who was stopped at the Copenhagen airport for a body search. The apology was for showing diplomatic impoliteness. The crisis stemmed from the Danish police's attempt to search Babacan at the airport, and Danish ambassador to Ankara Kim Jorgensen apologized. I like the name, Ali Babacan. The U.S. Marine has publicly apologized to the family of an unarmed man who was shot to death by U.S. troops in Iraq. Private John Judka is one of eight servicemen implicated in the attack 7 months ago in Hamdania. He's at Camp Pendleton, where he'll be sentenced. He's made a plea agreement with prosecutors and is likely to receive a light sentence. He apologized to the family of the Iraqi man who died. It's alleged that the eight-man team was looking for a suspected insurgent. When they failed to find him, the men became frustrated and dragged a disabled grandfather from his home, bound him and beat him, and then shot him to death. And another apology was heard. In the same case, Lance Corporal Tyler Jackson was sentenced to 21 months in custody and a general discharge. I would like to apologize to the family, he said. I would like to apologize to the Marine Corps, peers, friends, and family. I apologize for any wrongdoing I have done. At this point, it seems almost beside the point to say this. I'm quoting, the New Republic deeply regrets its early support for the Iraq War. There's an apology you can take to the bank. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, the mighty 104 in Berlin, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, and around the world via your computer, whenever you want it, live or archived at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like more rats deserting the ship if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody!